Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'd just like to say it's been an incredible emotional 2 hours. You know, we had Les Borion. What a soldier, man. What a gutsy guy. He did really great. He was even better than I thought he would be. And he gave some good ideas. I'm thinking anybody who would like to get involved in activism, you could take off of what he did. You could take courage from him, from his courage, and how the people, the evil people that put him in prison, in a way, I think it kind of backfired on them, because when they put him in prison, not only did he educate the inmates in prison, and they were now are fully aware of the eternal Jew. And a lot of them, we have the Bitter Ender on right now. But Bitter Ender, you know, and before I go to you, he said, or maybe it was Paul Fromm that said, many people in Canada, they thought they actually had free speech. They were stunned. They were actually shocked when people like Leslie Borie was put into prison for thought crime and speech crime. But that's, I would just wind that down for the last 2 hours we have. We talked about Dresden in the second hour. My God, that's always so emotional. But the Bitter Ender, he has a lot of topics we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to discuss a few current events that affect us greatly. But anyway, Bitter Ender, I hope you have at least one or two swords left to finish out the fight tonight.
We will try. Yeah.
Well, take off, Bitter Ender. This is your hour.
Something we were talking about earlier in the week. You know, all these mayors like Chicago and of course, out in California and up in the Northeast and in Massachusetts, they're saying they're not going to comply with the Trump administration and trying to get these illegal criminals. It's not just illegals. It's the illegal criminals they're going after that have raped and murdered and just, you know, had a terrorist attack on this country. They're not going to cooperate with Trump or ICE or Tom Homan or any of them getting them out of the country. And, you know, we were talking about, well, why doesn't Trump do what Lincoln did? Just send the army in and wipe them out. You know, they can't. They're not going to be allowed to secede from the country and say, no, in Massachusetts, we're not going to follow any law that the federal government passes or Michigan or New York State or wherever, or Illinois or Chicago or whatever. So why doesn't the federal government just do what Lincoln did, just send the army in there, wipe them out, and burn Chicago down or Albany, New York, or Boston, or whatever. I mean, it happened to us when we tried to say, we're leaving, we're not going to follow the federal government. They came in, destroyed the South, and forced us at gunpoint to be a part of the United States. What happened to all this stuff about democracy and one man, one vote, and all that? I always like to try to point out to people, I said, well, you just don't like being an American. You ought to just leave. That's what you ought to do. I said, well, obviously you didn't pay attention in history class. We tried for 4 years to leave and killed 380,000 of you and maimed and crippled another 200,000 or 300,000 and got rid of that dictator president you had. I mean, what else do we have to do to say we don't want to be here? So anyway, that's, you know, some people, they really don't understand history of what happened. And you know, we may see history repeat itself again pretty soon. It's going to be interesting to see. That Tom Homan said, you know, if these people interfere with the federal agents that are trying to get these illegal criminals out of here, they're going to go after the people that are interfering, whether it's a mayor. Or I think they said something about that TV crew out in Colorado that tipped off that gang in Aurora, Colorado. They had a whole gang of one of the gangs from Mexico or South America or somewhere had taken over a whole apartment complex. And they were going in there to get them out. And one of the people in the TV station there tipped them off that ICE was coming, and they all got out of there. When they raided these apartments, there were nobody there. So they said, you know, that's against the law. You're interfering with the law enforcement. So, Eddie, I tell you, it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, you know, when it comes down to push comes to shove on these people that are trying to keep these sanctuary cities.
Absolutely.
We will see what happens. Yeah.
Yes, we will see. And I think it depends on the testicles you're referring to that the Trump administration has. If they're really and truly going to do what they say, it looks like they're trying to do that. I mean, as far as with these aliens. But like I said eons ago, before I became not such a Trump fan, I said he would have to take a cue out of Hitler's playbook and get when Adolf Hitler put in the first, to my knowledge, you know more about that than I do, Gene, but the very first SS troops were not Waffen. They weren't combat troops. They were a bodyguard, a huge bodyguard for Hitler and high up Nazis. Well, I think here's what Trump, if he really wants to accomplish what he says with these aliens, he's going to have to do like our brother, like our great-great-grandpa Lincoln did, and say, the law be damned, the Constitution be damned, or the Declaration of Independence be damned, everything be damned except what I say. And I'm the king, I'm your master, and we're going to come in and we're going to rape and maim and pillage. But I wouldn't, that's not what I'm saying we need to do. The government, our people, Trump, if he wants to really accomplish this, he needs to get his own bodyguard, so to speak. He needs to go to the commandant in the Marine Corps, say, I want the personnel files on your top NCOs and your top junior grade officers, nothing above major probably. Same way, be the 5th Ranger Battalion, 82nd Airborne, and get your own guards and to where you can go in to the Secret Service. And I'm dead serious. It's going to take drastic, drastic, drastic measures. They're going to have to go in there, and he's going to have to tell the Secret Service, your services are no longer needed. You are part of the people that we're going to be. You're being offered, you can resign here on the spot, or you can just lose your damn job, or you can go to jail if you defy me. And he's going to have to tell these mayors, these governors, and these stinking federal judges to go to hell. And here's another thing. I've heard a fellow on the radio say this the other day, and I know you know this, Gene. The only court that's authorized in the Constitution of the United States is the Supreme Court. All these other federal courts, the hundreds of them, there's no authorization. They are there on the at the goodwill of the Congress. All they have to do is come out and give an executive order, do whatever it takes, and say, your services are no longer needed. We don't need any more of your stinking federal courts. There's precedent for that. Andrew Jackson told the Supreme Court at one time
they've made the law. Now let's see the court enforce it.
Yes. And he shipped the Indians over to Oklahoma and stuff, you know. But that's what's going to have to be done. Heads are going to have to roll. And I'll tell you what, buddy, I would have no qualms whatsoever sending in, APCs, Humvees, tanks, whatever it took. And just mowing these sons of bitches down that resist the effort to have these criminal aliens taken out of here. Matter of fact, if I had my choice, I'd rather these white cuck traitors have their ass kicked out before we do the get rid of the so-called aliens. I'd machine gun them sons of bitches in a heartbeat. But anyway, I guess I gotta watch my language. I'd sit on their body and eat a peanut butter sandwich. But anyway, I hope that's not too drastic, you know.
No, I think we know where you stand. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I don't guess I sound too liberal, Gene. But anyway, it's going to take drastic measures. And when we come back this break, I'll throw something out there to you. Heard J.D. Vance. And keep in mind, I'm not a fan of this government. In a way, I don't give a damn what they do, because I think I'm singing the same old song, second verse. I think I hear the music. People, I got to go away. Got to go to our first break. The third hour will be right back. So that's a quick break.
Oh, what?
I thought I heard the music. Did we not hear the music, Lizzie?
No, no. We got.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought I heard the music. I guess I'm just here. I guess that's my old ears playing tricks. They have been roaring a lot lately. They really have. But anyway, I kind of lost my train of thought. But anyway, when we come back, we'll talk about. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Now I know what I was going to say. I'm waiting on the complete destruction of this, what we call the federal government. That's the only way we, the people, especially in the South, are ever going to have any type of independence. And we'll take off on this when we come back. And we'll also take off on the speech that J.D. Vance gave in Munich the other day. Be right back, folks.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Blood River Radio family. Me and Gene, during the break, we were talking about J.D. Vance gave a speech in Munich, Thursday, I think it was?
Mm-hmm.
And he
was
talking to the leaders in the EU, and he's ruffled quite a few feathers. Some of it was hypocrisy, but he did some major, we used to deer hunt a lot, sleeping on the ground. He pissed on the fire. If you've ever peed on the fire when you're trying to sleep and you can smell it, it's a bad smell. Well, he did that. Gee, he pissed. Hey, tell our Blood River Radio audience, I hope it didn't gross him out, how he pissed on the fire, Peter Ender.
Well, he did. He told them that the United States was not going to be the sole provider for NATO, that this NATO is supposed to defend Europe, and the European countries are going to have to pony up and take over most of the funding for that. And we'll help, but we're not going to be the daddy war bucks to pay for the whole thing. And then the other thing he said, he was talking about how the enemies of Europe are not the Russians or the Chinese. The enemy is within. That how the European countries have turned on their own people with censorship. And a lot of these, and the people are reacting by forming and supporting these far-right political groups. And he said Europe has failed its own people, and said just much like the United States had done, and we're trying to get it turned around. So it was funny on Fox, they were showing all these European leaders in the EU and NATO sitting out in the audience, and boy, looks like they've been sucking on lemons all day. You talk about some sour faces. Oh, my God. They didn't like that at all, especially when they said the United States, Uncle Sugar wasn't putting up the money for all of this stuff anymore, that they're going to have to chip in. So we'll see how it goes. So,
you know, one thing I'll chime in
before we go. Interesting times.
Yes. One thing is that, Gene, I've told you this during the break. I didn't know it was so bad. I knew that people in England had gone to jail for standing outside, for instance, abortion clinics, in silent prayer. One man was praying, and the police came up to him and asked him, what was he praying about? And I would have said, it's none of your damn business, Flatfoot. But anyway, he said he was praying for his dead son. I think he said he and his wife, when they were younger and they didn't come to their senses, they had an abortion. He was praying for his dead son. Well, they carried him off to jail for having a silent prayer. I didn't know this. J.D. Vance told the audience, Gene, I don't know if you picked up or not, he said it's so bad in Scotland, not only are you not allowed to do silent prayer outside, they said it could be, it's probably a violation to have private prayer inside your house. J.D. Cash nailed him. He talked about that. But I'd say, like I was telling Gene did a break a minute ago, Mr. Hypocrisy, look here in the United States. There's people right here in the United States that are still in jail, or I think maybe they've been pardoned, I'm not sure, for doing the same thing, for praying silent prayer outside an abortion clinic. But like you say, and he nailed him for mass illegal immigration. Immigration. He said immigration, period. I was stunned. He said that one out of every five people, like in Germany, for instance, or from a non-EU country, he wouldn't say nig. He wouldn't say that. That's what he meant, a nigger from Africa, but he wouldn't say that. I guess we shouldn't say it either. But Gene made me do it. But anyway, I guess I'll shut the hell up. Gene, I just wanted to bring that to the people, you know, give them a little up-to-date thing. But go ahead. Where are we going from now, Bitter Ender?
All right. Well, we try to use this, the third hour, as the Confederate History Hour. And since we're in the month of February, I thought I might talk about a couple of battles that were fought in Tennessee during February. And that was on the two major rivers in Tennessee, the Tennessee River and the Cumberland River, at Fort Henry on the Tennessee and Fort Donelson on the Cumberland, and how the loss of those two forts actually opened up the South to invasion, right down into the central heartland of the Southern Confederacy. So first of all, we need our listeners to imagine a couple of maps of the United States. Now, Eddie's too cheap to get TV sets for everybody, so you're going to have to use your imagination. Yeah. First of all, a map of the Eastern Theater of the War, which was like Maryland, Virginia, and the Carolinas. And if you look at that map, the rivers in that part of the country flow from west to east, and most of them are very narrow. They are very, they don't have a lot of navigation area on there. You can go up part of the way up the James River to Richmond. Of course, up the Potomac, you get to Washington, but then the Great Falls of the Potomac, and that's it. But the rest of them, you couldn't use it for a naval invasion. And those east to west or west to east lines across there were pretty much defensive barriers to a federal army coming from Washington headed down towards Richmond, Virginia. Now, if you look at so that's east of the Appalachian Mountain chain. If you look to the west of the Appalachians, what they call the Western Theater of the War, all of those rivers were like a dagger right into the central South. First of all, you had the Ohio River that was not exactly a border between the Confederate states and the northern states. Never did really control Kentucky. They had a government that seceded, but it was a government in exile. So you had a river that they could send supplies and build these gunboats and ironclad ships from Pittsburgh, Wheeling, Cincinnati, Louisville, and all the way down into the Central South. So that was more of an avenue of invasion for the Northern armies. Then, of course, you had the Mississippi. That pretty much divided the western third of the Confederacy. So if the northern armies or navy controlled the Mississippi, then Missouri, Arkansas, a large portion of Louisiana, Texas, and the Indian nations were cut off from the rest of the Confederacy. And the Mississippi could be invaded from the Gulf of Mexico or coming down south down the river. Most of the attacks were launched from St. Louis and Cairo, Illinois, that were coming down that way. Then you had the Tennessee River that empties into the Ohio, but the Tennessee was navigable all the way from the Ohio River through West Tennessee, across northern Alabama, and all the way up into East Tennessee at Knoxville. So that was easy for them to use. The Cumberland River, which is emptied into the Ohio just a few miles upstream from the Tennessee River, that would take an invading army to Clarksville and right on to Nashville. The Confederacy had no navy, so they had no way of really defending on the water. They had to rely on river forts. They built a series of forts along the Mississippi River, the Tennessee and Cumberland River. The forts on the Mississippi River started out up north on the river at Island Number 10, then Fort Randolph as you came down the river towards Memphis, Fort Randolph and Fort Pillow. The attacks on the Confederate forts that we're going to talk about today were Fort Henry on the Tennessee River and Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River. Both of those battles were fought in February. Admiral Foote's gunboats, U.S. Navy gunboats, and Grant's infantry were sent to attack Fort Henry on the Tennessee River. It was a very poor location for a fort, but it had to be in Tennessee. The aim of the Confederate government was not to violate the neutrality of Kentucky. Kentucky was trying to stay neutral, which would never happen. I mean, they were on the border between the northern states and the southern states. So a better place for the fort would have been across. The Fort Henry was built on the eastern side of the Tennessee River, or right-hand side. The better place would have been across the river and up or downstream a little bit. Fort Hyman was later built in the war. But at that time, that was part of Kentucky. Tennessee has a kind of a screwy northern border between Tennessee and Kentucky. West Tennessee is going along, you know, an east-west line, and then all of a sudden it gets to the Tennessee River, and it jumps up several miles up into Kentucky and then continues that east-west line all the way over to the corner of Tennessee where Virginia, Tennessee, and North Carolina meet. So they didn't want to violate Kentucky's attempt at staying neutral, so they built the fort on the Tennessee side. But it was down low, close to the water. And these engineers from West Point were trying to build the fort there, and the locals told them, said, look, you see all those that brush up in the top of those trees? That's how the Tennessee River is going to get when it floods. And they didn't pay any attention to them. So when the federal gunboats were coming up the river with Grant's infantry loaded on steamboats behind them, the fort was attacked on February the 6th, 1862. And the Tennessee River was running at flood stage, and it actually flooded out the fort. the locals pointed that out to them. Lloyd Tillman was left there and had about 3,000 poorly armed and poorly trained Confederates. And Grant unloaded his men a few miles north of the fort, downriver from the fort, and was going to march overland and surround the fort from the land side, and Admiral Foote's gunboats were going to attack it from the river. Well, Grant disembarked his troops, but they never even got close to the fort. They were trapped in all this backwater from the rising water from the Tennessee, and these creeks that had used to be just small creeks now were flooded by the water coming out of the river and backing up in these creeks. And then once they got out of all that mess, then they were stuck in these muddy roads where it had been raining so much. And they never took part in the battle at Fort Henry. And what did happen, Admiral Foote's gunboats just sailed right into the fort. The river batteries were flooded out. And so most of the soldiers escaped across that land between the rivers to Fort Donelson. But Tillman remained behind with about 70 gunners and operated the artillery until they had to surrender. And we'll pick it up right there after the break.
So be right, that's kind of a funny story in a way. Be right back, folks.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. President Trump's extremely tough immigration policies have contributed to a significant decline in illegal border crossings. Correspondent Ken Lorman reports crossings have reached the lowest levels in decades.
During the first 18 days of President Trump's second term, federal agents arrested nearly 11,000 illegal immigrants. That surpassed the total number of apprehensions under former President Joe Biden. Additionally, the Trump administration successfully pressured Mexico to deploy 10,000 soldiers to the U.S.-Mexican border. That was following a threat to impose a 25% tariff. Ken Lorman reporting.
Also at townhall.com, more proposed budget cuts at the Environmental Protection Agency.
The new head of the EPA says he'll try to rescind $20 billion in grants for environmental projects approved under the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act. Administrator Lee Zeldin says in a video posted on X that the Environmental Protection Agency will revoke contracts for a green bank that's set to fund tens of thousands of projects, including those that fight climate change. Many of those projects focus on disadvantaged communities. Republicans in Congress have called the Green Bank a slush fund. Donna Warder, Washington.
IRS will lay off thousands of probationary workers in the middle of the tax season, and it could start as soon as next week. This as the Trump administration intensifies sweeping efforts to shrink the size of the federal workforce. President Trump touring a Boeing airplane today to check out the new hardware and technology features and highlighting the aircraft maker's delay in delivering updated versions of Air Force One presidential aircraft. Private plane was parked at Palm Beach International Airport earlier in the day in Florida. More on these stories, townhall.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-504-8790. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-504-8790. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-504-8790.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
A Bienis is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, like we always say, time is money, and without wasting any more time, we'll go back to the Professor Bitter Ender. And I've been really enjoying this show, this broadcast with the Bitter Ender. Go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Okay, well, we said... In February, in our Confederate History Hour, there are two major battles that were fought in Tennessee in February, at Fort Henry on the Tennessee River and Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River, and that pretty well sealed the fate of Tennessee falling to the enemy. We talked a little bit about Fort Henry on the Tennessee River, and it's kind of confusing. We talk about up and down on a map, but the Tennessee at that point in West Tennessee flows north up to the Ohio River. So if we're saying up or down, we're really talking about the flow of the river, which way the stream runs. So it runs north up to the Ohio River, and we're talking about down on the map and up with the river. So that is a little confusing. So anyway, on February 6th, a combination of the Federal Navy and the Federal Army took Fort Henry, and actually the Army under Grant never got there. They were stuck in the backwaters and muddy roads. The infantry never got there, but the floodwaters of the Tennessee River came up over the river batteries, and Admiral Foote's gunboats just literally sailed right into the fort. There was a small defensive effort made by Lloyd Tillman from Paducah, Kentucky, and the few Confederates that were remaining. Most of them escaped and went across the small neck of land and land between the rivers to Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River. And a few of them stayed behind to man the few heavy guns that weren't underwater and fire on the federal gunboats, and then they surrendered and they went to a prisoner of war camp. So they did escape, most of the infantry did, over toward Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River. So Grant finally got his men out of the swamps and the backwater before they all drowned, and headed over to Fort Donelson himself. And Admiral Foote then had to turn around with his gunboats and sail down the Tennessee River, which is going up on the map, or north, up to the Ohio River, and then up the Ohio River and up the Cumberland River. Well, Grant was supposed to meet him there, and it was supposed to be a combined attack against the Confederates at Fort Donelson, with the Navy coming up the river and the infantry coming in from the land side. But Grant was delayed. Not only was the weather against him, but there was an individual that was harassing his army from the time they got off the boats until they got all the way over to Fort Donelson. It was an unknown lieutenant colonel that had no military experience, never went to West Point, the Citadel, or VMI, but was a one heck of a fighter. And that was Lieutenant Colonel Nathan Bedford Forrest. And Forrest's cavalry blocked the roads. They cut down trees across the road. They set ambushes. They did everything they could to harass Grant. And so the Federal Navy got there long before Grant arrived. He had 21,000 infantry, and the Confederates at Fort Donelson, even with the ones that escaped from Fort Henry, only had about 15,000 with no Navy, nothing to attack the federal ships out on the Cumberland River. So on February the 13th, Admiral Foote and his gunboats decided they would attack Fort Donelson, and they thought this would be another easy defeat, just like what they had done at Fort Henry. They'd just sail right in there and the battle would be over, and they didn't care if Grant and the infantry ever showed up or not. But now the Confederate artillery was not down on the river. It was up on the high ground. And they were firing with plunging fire, with the shells falling down on these boats, coming down. And all the boats were hit. and four of them were disabled, and Admiral Foote was knocked out, and he never took part in the Fort Donelson attack. He didn't know what planet he was on, much less where he was on the river. So this is interesting. Plunging fire was very successful for the Confederates. If their artillery was placed up on high ground and the shells were coming down on the enemy's navy, they had much greater success. And you go back to the east, and the same thing happened when the Federal Navy decided they were going to sail up the James River and take Richmond because McClellan's army was bogged down on the peninsula. They came steaming up the James River until they got to Drury's Bluff. And there, the Confederate artillery was mounted way up on a bluff on high ground, firing down on the ships. And they had the same fate there on the James River as the Federal Navy did on the Cumberland River, trying to attack Fort Donelson. Really took a beating, and they never took part in the Battle of Fort Donelson. And the Federal Navy over in the east on the James River, they never made it up the river to Richmond either. It was always a land battle for that. So anyway, the Confederates, finally Grant got there and began to surround the fort and pin the defenders up against the Cumberland River. And there was some skirmishing going on, snipers picking off. Oh, this was interesting. The Federal Army was marching overland from the Tennessee River over about 12, 15 miles over to Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River. And you know this very much, Eddie, Tennessee weather, you can be outside in shorts and a T-shirt one day, and the next day you got to bundle up like Nana of the North or something.
Yes.
So it was very unusually warm weather for February. Well, these Yankee boys had never been south, and they thought they had come to the sunny south. So a lot of them just pitched their overcoats off in a ditch. And then on the night of February 15th, the 14th and 15th, a snowstorm hit, and here all these Yankee boys were out there with no overcoat. Some of them even got rid of their blankets, and they were freezing out there and trying to build fires to stay warm. And as soon as they lit a fire, the Confederate snipers were picking them off. They would just aim left or right of wherever the fire was and hit somebody that was trying to huddle up close to the fire. So they couldn't build fires to try to stay warm. And the from then on, it was extremely cold weather, and snow and sleet and all the wonderful stuff we have that comes down every once in a while in the wintertime. So the Confederates decided, the West Point generals, General Floyd, General Pillow, and General Buckner made a major mistake there, that Albert Sidney Johnson sent these three officers to command the defenses there. And they couldn't decide among each other what they were going to do. Instead of having one person totally in charge and everybody subordinate to them, they had three bickering back and forth. So they decided that they're going to break out of the fort and escape to Clarksville and then on to Nashville. And on the morning of February 15th, they launched a counterattack out of the fort. Grant was caught totally by surprise and had his lines bent back into a sharp V with their backs up against a bluff over the Cumberland River. So now they had two options. They had the road was open to Clarksville. They could escape like they'd planned to do the night before. Or the second option was throw every person you had into the attack and drive Grant back and drive his army right over the bluff and into the Cumberland River. And this is what Forrest was pushing for. They had him out on the flank. And that morning, his cavalry overrode two batteries of Federal artillery, captured the artillery. They took a lot of prisoners. And he was waiting for the rest of the infantry to come up and finish the job. And we would have never heard of unconditional surrender Grant or U.S. Grant, or probably we would never heard of President Grant. But luck was on his side. These three characters that were the West Point generals, they had, like we said, had two options now. They could escape down the road to Clarksville and on to Nashville with 15,000 men, or they could put everyone they had, the 15,000 infantry plus Forrest cavalry, plus use the artillery they'd captured and attack what was left of Grant's lines and drive him off the bluff and into the river. They came up with a third option. they decided to turn around, march back into the fort, and that night they were bickering about back and forth about what they should do. So they came up with the brilliant idea of surrendering to Grant.
So,
yeah, that's, you know, some of our worst generals were in charge of that. So anyway, they called Forrest in, not to get his opinion on it, but he was a lieutenant colonel. They were generals, and they'd been to West Point. But they were just going to tell him, since he was in charge of the cavalry there, about 600, 700 cavalry troopers in his cavalry battalion, that they were going to surrender. And Forrest said, "What in the hell are you talking about? We can get out of here." Said, "My scouts have been out. The road to Clarksville is open." Now, this was about midnight. And they said, "No, no, we see campfires out there. The Federals have retaken their lines. We can't do this, can't do that." So he sends his scouts out again. And they found out, yeah, there were campfires. But when they got close enough, it was the Federal wounded soldiers that had been wounded in that day's battle. And now they've built campfires to try to keep from freezing to death that night out on the battlefield. So the scouts come back in. They tell Forrest. He says, "Nope, the road's open. We can get out." And I'll tell you what he said to him. What else he said to him as soon as we get back from the break.
I got to hear that, buddy. Be right back, folks.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, sadly, we've gone to the last segment of the last hour, but the bitter ender is going to wrap this segment up with some very interesting information about the war. It's almost unbelievable how stupid some of our so-called leaders were. Go ahead, bitter ender.
Okay, so we talked about the Confederates launched a counterattack against Grant on the early morning of February 15th. Very successful. Forrest was out on the flank with his cavalry. He was capturing Federal artillery, taking prisoners. Grant was caught completely by surprise. He didn't think that people in the fort are supposed to attack you. They're supposed to hunker down in the fort. And his lines were driven back, and we talked about into almost like a sharp V shape. And the Confederates now had two options. They could escape and get to Nashville, or they could throw everything they had into the attack and probably finish off Grant's troops. But the brilliant West Pointers came up with a third option, going back into the fort, and decided to surrender the next day. And they called Forrest in, not because they wanted his opinion, but because he was in charge of the cavalry, and they just told him what was going to happen. His scouts had been out. They found the road away from Dover, Tennessee, and Fort Donelson open to get away to Clarksville and then on to Nashville. And he was telling them this. We've been out twice, and found the road open. They said, no, we can't do it. It's too cold. We can't march this way. It'd be too hard on the troops. Of course, they didn't know that by the end of the war, they were going to be marching barefoot through snow and ice. And they said after the Battle of Nashville, you could follow Hood's army by the bloody footprints in the snow. But that was 4 years down the road. So anyway, Forrest told him, he said, I didn't bring my men here to surrender. He said, we're going out of here tonight, even if we have to bust hell wide open. And he didn't have to bust anything open. He took 600 of his men and about 300 or 400 infantry that climbed up behind him and rode double to get out of there that night.
Wow.
They never were stopped. They never were bothered by the Federal Army. And he, Forrest told him, said, if you get out of here, my cavalry will cover your escape route. We'll be the rear guard. We'll guarantee you no Federals are going to come after you if you get out of here tonight. And then they wouldn't do it. So, yeah, he told them, we're not going to surrender, even if we have to bust hell wide open to get out of here. Yeah. And that's that title of that book by Dr. Samuel Mitchum, Bust Hell Wide Open. It's a great book on Forrest if you get a chance to read it. So they got away and with approximately about 1,500 men, and then the other 15,000 were surrendered to Grant the next day. And they left Floyd and Pilla, took off. They got a steamboat that early morning and took off and headed down the river to Nashville. And they left all their men there to be sent off to concentration camps up north. Most of them went to Camp Douglas in Chicago. Some of the officers were sent to Fort Warren. But anyway, they got out of there and left the enlisted men. Great leadership there. And what happened was they left General Buckner to surrender to Grant, Simon Buckner. And he thought he'd get good terms from Grant because when they were at West Point, Grant had a drinking binge and lost all his money, and Buckner actually loaned him some money so he could get home after the classes were over in June at West Point and get back home to Ohio. And Buckner was the one that loaned him the money to get back home. And so he was met with Grant and kind of reminded him how they'd been friends before the war and in the Mexican War and all that stuff. Grant forgot all of that. He said, I will give you no terms except unconditional surrender, which meant they couldn't decide anything. They were hoping they could surrender the fort and then the soldiers would be left, maybe leave their rifles and artillery and everything, but then allow the soldiers to leave. And Grant said, nope, unconditional surrender. And that's where he got his nickname, U.S. or Unconditional Surrender Grant. And he was a big hero, of course, in the North. This was the first victory that the North had and reinforced the idea that this war was going to be over in a hurry and the Southerners wouldn't fight. Well, if they had bad leadership, they wouldn't fight. So anyway, Forrest gets to Nashville. Word of the surrender of Fort Donelson had reached Nashville about the same time he arrived, and pandemonium, a panic broke out in Nashville and swept the city. There were mobs of people out in the streets breaking into the army warehouses trying to steal food or whatever they could get. And Forrest got there, and he put down the riot. He got the fire engines to pump water out of the Cumberland River, which was about to freeze over, and spray all these people down with fire, with water, with ice cold water. And then some of them, he had to whack them over the side of the head with the flat of his sword. He didn't use the edge, just the side, and break this up. And then he got a lot of the supplies on trains. All these trains were trying to get out of Nashville. He threw the passengers off the train and said, no, we're taking military supplies out of here down to Murfreesboro, and got most of the military supplies out of Nashville before the Federal Army got there. So anyway, that's what happened in February, and it really opened up the whole Central South to the Federal advance. They came into Nashville a few days later and took over that city. It was the first state capital to fall to a Federal Army. And as soon as they got there, they started working on building fortifications around the southern side of Nashville. You had the Cumberland River on the north side of Nashville, and then they built a U shape from the river on the east around south of Nashville to the river on the west to defend Nashville and hold it against Confederate attacks to try to retake the city, because they knew that was probably going to happen. And they had this Fort Negley that was built, one of the many forts that were built around there, that has been restored as a historic site. And the people of Nashville, though, when that thing was first built, they hated that fort. First of all, it was on St. Cloud Hill, and the Yankees went, and that was a picnic place for Nashvillians. And you and a lot of our listeners know that Nashville sits down in a bowl, and it is hot as everything in the summertime.
You got that
so
right.
The people could get out and go up to this hill where these big shade trees were and have picnics and get away from that heat. The Yankees cut down all the trees. They built this fort. Most of the guns of the fort, heavy artillery, were turned on Nashville. And they were pretty much telling the people, you give us any trouble at all, and we'll blast your city right into the river. So after the war, this thing just fell into ruin. And in the 1930s, a WPA project came in there and rebuilt it, and the people of Nashville just left it, and it grew up in weeds again. They hated the thing. I mean, it's like the Bastille to the French. They absolutely hated that thing. And so they finally now gotten some more money and built a visitor center, and, you know, they've opened it back up, and it's the glory of the great Union Army that came in here and you know, all this garbage about that. But anyway, that went on, and every Confederate offensive that was launched by the Army of Tennessee was in some way an attempt to recapture the territory in Middle Tennessee, North Alabama, Northern Mississippi that was lost when the river forts at Fort Henry on the Tennessee River, Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River, lost the defenses of Middle Tennessee, Northern Alabama, and Northern Mississippi. And once Grant's army came down, down from north to south, but upriver to Pittsburgh Landing, and stopped there, then all of these forts up and down the river up above Memphis on the Mississippi, they had to abandon them. They never fought there because now you had a huge army sitting right behind you. And so these forts were untenable. So they had to abandon all these forts all the way down the Mississippi, down to Memphis itself, and try to just defend Memphis, which was under attack by the Federal Navy, and it hadn't really been prepared yet for a huge naval assault. And the Battle of Memphis didn't last very long, and then the Federal Army took over another major city, got Memphis for supply lines. And Nashville was important to the Federal Army because it was on a river. So back in those days, if you look at a map, most of the battles that were fought in the War for Southern Independence were either on a river or on a railroad line, because there were so many just dirt roads in the South, and in the rainy season, you couldn't move 3,000 to 4,000 or 5,000 wagons and teams of horses and mules over these dirt roads. The wagons would just sink down to the axles on these dirt roads. So you had to have a supply line for a huge army that was invading the South. So Nashville was important. It was on a river. It had three railroad lines that were coming in there. So once the Federal Army took Nashville, then they can use the Nashville and Decatur Railroad headed down into Alabama, the Nashville and Chattanooga Railroad going southeast towards Chattanooga and Atlanta. And that was a major supply route for them. So it was a terrible blow to the Confederacy to lose Nashville and the railroads and the river that they had there. And so you look at a lot of the battles that were fought at Shiloh, at Murfreesboro, Bragg's invasion of Kentucky, and then in the fall of 1862, and then the Battle of Murfreesboro on January 31st, and then finally John Bell Hood's attempt to march into Tennessee and fought the battles at Franklin and Nashville. All of those were an attempt to overcome the disaster at Fort Donelson mainly, but Fort Henry as well, in these two battles that were fought in February of 1862 in Tennessee. So with the Federal Army taking Fort Henry that was on the Tennessee River, now they could cut that Bowling Green to Memphis Railroad, that cut that supply line, and now gunboats could come all the way up the Tennessee River as far as Muscle Shoals and Florence in northern Alabama. So it was a double disaster.
Yes, it was. I wish we had time for me to ask you a couple of questions, but Gene, we have run completely slap dab out of time. We've got mere seconds, but thank you so much for coming on and doing another masterful job, brother. Hopefully you'd be here same time, same place next week. That'd be the 22nd.
Yes, sir.
But thank you so much. And thank you, Miss Lizzie, Miss Teenage America, for running the flawless board. Thank you, Blood River Radio audience. Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Les. Thank you, Paul. I'll see y'all next week, folks. Good night.